As Congress races to pass another $1 trillion plus of emergency coronavirus economic relief, with just days to go until extra unemployment benefits are set to expire, let's get the view of one of the country's top economists, Mohammed El-Erian, Chief Economic Advisor at Allianz and President-elect of Queen's College, Cambridge. Mohammed El-Erian, welcome back to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me.
Well, and we're hearing that this stimulus will include another round of those $1,200 direct payments to Americans. How helpful do you think those have been for families and for the economy?
They've definitely been helpful. And as you point out, they've been helpful both for the people who received them and for the economy as a whole. We continue to live in a world where people cannot get jobs for no fault of their own. Certain states have gone backwards now on the economic reopening because of health reasons. People are losing jobs again. And there's a sense that household economic insecurity is going up and some people are really suffering. So there is a good case for it. The problem is that we need to find a better solution than simply repeating the same thing over and over again.
Why?
Because fundamentally, there is a conflict that must be resolved. And that is the conflict between lives and livelihood. We can't be this pendulum that swings between reopening and then closing again, reopening and closing again. We have to reconcile health with economic reopening. And you look around the world, it is possible if people change behaviors.
Republicans don't want to continue the $600 a week extra unemployment payments. Here's the White House Chief of Staff Mark Meadows speaking yesterday on ABC's This Week.
The original unemployment benefits actually paid people to stay home, and actually a lot of people got more money staying at home than they would going back to work. And so the president's been very clear. Our Republican senators have been very clear. We're not going to extend that provision.
What do you think about that? Because this has been an argument that's been made many times, especially by small business owners saying, I can't get my workers to come back because they're making more on unemployment than I can pay them. At the same time, people who are without a job are still suffering a lot and may need the extra money.
And that's the balance. Now, it is true that for some people, they were better off staying at home than going back to their jobs. That argument was valid when we were reopening, and the hope was that we're going to continue reopening. It has become less so now. And I think it points to a fundamental issue, which is how should a safety net be set? If there are a few people that benefit more than they should, do you penalize others? And if the economy is going back to normal, the answer is no. Okay, you shouldn't allow people to get paid more for staying at home. But if people can't get jobs, if it's not a question of willingness, but it's a question of ability, then there is a good argument for continuing this extra support.
What about the spending part of it? The House passed a $3 trillion additional stimulus bill in May. This hasn't been taken up in the Senate. The Republican proposal is expected to be more like $1 trillion. And here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer speaking on Morning Edition today. He was asked about all this federal spending.
If we limit our spending right now, we will be in greater debt later because the economy will get worse. The recession will get deeper and could turn into a depression.
What do you think about that? Should we even be talking about all of the money that's being put on the country's credit card?
So yes, we should be talking about it and talking about it in the following way, Jeremy. We should be asking the question, are we doing things that promote economic growth? Because ultimately, whether it's a country or whether it's an individual, your debt load is a function not only of what you own, but also what you earn. So if we're adding debt and not growing, then we're going to have a big debt problem. If, however, adding debt in order to grow faster in future is the approach, then we're doing the right thing. And that goes back, Jeremy, that there are four buckets that Congress should focus on over time. And I say over time because it will not take up all four right now. One is what we've talked about, pure relief, helping Americans during a period of pain and suffering. There's a second one that they should also focus on right now, which is making sure that we can live with COVID in a healthy an economically productive fashion. Because that's what we're going to do for a while until we get a vaccine. That's about funding for testing, for healthcare. Mm-hmm. And then the third bucket is to make sure that we address downward pressure on productivity and growth over the long term. And the final bucket is addressing long-term household economic insecurity. I suspect that the most we can get is congressional action on the first two, and that has to be done in a way that promotes growth, and it can be done.
What about money for state and local governments, which are really struggling right now? Should the federal government be giving them more money so that they can stay afloat at the moment?
Yes, because once again, they have lost revenue in a big way, not because of anything they've done wrong, but because of the situation. And it's not just that. When you go into this mindset of how do we live with COVID-19 in a healthy manner, you look at activities that support productive engagement of individual and businesses in the economy to keep things going, because we want to keep things going as we make progress on the health issues. And support for state and local authorities is a key element in this regard.
I want to ask you about a couple of other things. New home sales went up 13.8% last month, and sales of previously owned homes jumped a record 20.7% in June. What is going on with the housing market right now, and is it likely to last?
So whether it's the housing market, whether it were retail sales, all the backward-looking economic indicators will look like a V. Things coming back very sharply. Why? Because we started opening up at the end of May and in June. And there was optimism, and there was a lot of repressed desire to do things, including housing. And housing was also benefiting enormously from very low mortgage rates.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you look at weekly jobless claim, if you look at retail traffic, if you look at mobility, if you look at restaurant bookings, all those have flattened out. So I worry that rather than continuing a V, we may look at a square root where things come back and then level off. And I think that as we go forward, we're going to see that different economic series are going to start being less dynamic, unfortunately, than they've been in June until we sort out this health issue.
One of the things that stayed with me from our last conversation is I asked you if you were concerned about emerging markets like Brazil and Turkey and South Africa and what COVID-19 will mean for their economies. You said you weren't concerned, you were terrified. Do you still feel that way, or what terrifies you now?
Oh, I'm absolutely terrified. And if you look at the numbers of Brazil and India, you see an outbreak that is out of control. And healthcare facilities there are not what you'd like them to be when you're facing such a health emergency. When we last spoke, what I mentioned at the time was that what developing countries were experiencing was the indirect effects of this virus. The outbreak had happened in China, around China, in Europe and the US. And if you were a developing country in Latin America, what you felt is lower exports, lower tourism, lower workers' remittances, and lower foreign direct investment. Now, these countries are dealing not just with the indirect effects, but they're dealing with the direct effects. Mm-hmm. And this lives versus livelihood equation is much trickier in developing countries. I remember an African friend of mine telling me, you know, we don't have the ability to throw money at this problem like you do. So if we have an outbreak, the choice we may end up facing is, do we die from infection or do we die from hunger? And that way of putting it is really a way to show why one should be terrified. The last thing we need right now is an outbreak in countries that don't have the health facilities to deal with it.
Just based on what you're seeing right now, do you think that in January of this coming year, we are going to still be talking about, can schools reopen? Can people go back to work? Or will we be past that at that point?
So I'm not a health expert, but I read the news today that I'm sure you have, that Google has gone to its employees and said you can expect to work from home until the middle of next year. I think we are living with this uncertainty. The good news, though, is every day is a win in the sense that we learn more about this virus. And the basic problem is our own behavior. I live in California, where I can tell you that in Southern California, people are not wearing masks enough. It's not because masks aren't available. It is because they have a different assessment of their individual risk from the risk facing society. And until we align these risk assessments, we're going to have this big uncertainty about whether our school's going to reopen or not. So it's up to individuals to just realize that we can actually solve that issue or at least minimize the disruptions.
That is Mohammed El-Erian, the chief economic advisor at Allianz and president-elect of Queen's College, Cambridge. Always great to talk with you. Thank you so much for joining us.
I really appreciate it. Thank you, Jeremy.